Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I'm Hemant Mehta.
And I'm Jessica Blumke.
And you're listening to the podcast for FriendlyAtheist.com. You can now listen to all of our episodes and see show notes at FriendlyAtheistPodcast.com.
Wendy Thomas Russell is a journalist who spent years covering criminal justice. In 2008, she began writing books for and about children, including three books for the Girl Scouts. In 2011, her focus shifted to secular parenting. Not only does she blog on Pathos at Natural Wonders, she's about to release a new book called Relax, It's Just God, How and Why to Talk to Your Kids About Religion When You're Not Religious. Wendy, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much.
So why this book and why now? Why is this book so important to have in our society right now?
Right. Well, I don't think that there's a better time to be releasing a book about secular parenting. We have more than 60 million non-religious people in the country, and it's around 14 million. I'm no mathematician or statistician, and I'm not sure, but you know, my numbers are sort of calculated about 14 million or so are secular parents, and the majority of them are first generation secularists, meaning right. They were raised in a religion that no longer sort of feels right to them. So they can't fall back on what they were taught as children, and generally speaking, a lot of them are searching for the right approach to take with their own kids. So, that secularism is on the rise is one reason that that the book is so timely. But mm-hmm. The other thing is that intolerance seems to have reached a crescendo, worldwide right now, and I do worry a little bit about forgetting to teach our kids the value of, true religious tolerance and understanding. And sure. And I don't want to fight religious bigotry by raising a non-religious bigot. So, yeah. That's sort of why I think it's a good time to write the book.
Well, what I think is interesting is we've talked to one or two other authors who have written secular parenting type books.
Dan Orell, yeah. Dale McGowan.
Yeah, not to name drop.
But what
I think is interesting is this isn't about just raising secular kids or teaching morals to kids without religion. It's about talking to your kids about religion. Is there something particular that made you want to write about that?
Yeah, it's a very practical book in that way, and I think you're right. It is a bit different. When I started out writing, I started writing it and blogging about 4 years ago, and my daughter was five at the time, and she started asking questions about God, and I realized that I just didn't know how I wanted to go about answering those questions. So, it was very practical. Like, what should I say? When should I say it? What tone should I use? What word should I use? And so, when it came to religion as a practical matter, I just found myself badly and needing like a guidebook, and I couldn't find one. So I wrote one.
Did you ever screw up? Are there any cringeworthy moments that come to mind where you answered a question for your daughter and you're like, why would I say that? In hindsight.
Yeah, there definitely were. I think that I made the mistake, especially early on, that a lot of people make, which is I just talk too much. She asked a simple question, and I just droned on and on and told her until she was like, "I don't care. Stop talking.
I'm five. So, I don't need to know all this."
Yeah, exactly. You lost me like 17 hours ago. So I do think that that is kind of one of the more common and troublesome, pits to fall into.
Do you live in a part of the country where religion is kind of on the forefront. Clearly, you said you're outside, so you're not in the Midwest and you're not in the Northeast. So,
Yeah, right. I was raised in the Midwest. I was raised in a very small town in Missouri. And I moved out to California about 15 years ago. So I am in an extremely, I would call it progressively liberal city in Long Beach. It's in kind of south of Los Angeles. So where I am, it's very diverse, you know, I would say relatively diverse and open. And so I, you know, was pleasantly surprised to find that when I did start blogging and writing about my lack of religious leanings, I didn't ever feel like I was going to be firebombed or that anyone was going to, you know, be really outraged. I was a little nervous, you know, about, you know, my child being in school because she's actually on the other side of the orange curtain. So she's in Orange County, which is a bit, as we know, more conservative. So I was a little concerned about that at first, but you know, that too, I've just realized that people tend to be pretty laid back about religion around here.
One of the things I absolutely love about the atheist parenting books that are coming out, and I think it's worth noting because it's important, when you compare them to books about raising your kids written by religious people, they talk about, for example, you know, raising your kids with Christian values to believe in certain things. And atheist books are very much against that. It's not about, you know, quote unquote, indoctrinating your child with atheism. It's about teaching them how to think. And I wonder what you make of that in your book about, you know, what if your child comes home and says, your daughter says, I believe in heaven, I believe in Jesus, even if she's very young, how do you deal with that? And are you okay with that ultimately?
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, I think that's the crux of my book. So I'm glad you asked it. Cause it's very much, I do think that, my book is written really for anyone who considers themselves to be non-religious. It doesn't necessarily mean just atheists and agnostics. It could be, you know, people who just don't care, you know, about religion or people who are maybe progressively theist. But certainly the thing that binds them together is this, the sense of not wanting to indoctrinate them into their own worldview. And so that to me is the book is about how do you do that? How do you get there? And I think that one of the fundamental tenets that I've adopted is it's okay to believe in God. Your kid can believe anything she wants. You know, it's not, there's no, you know, there's nothing wrong with adopting a belief in a certain God or even a certain set of, you know, religious tenets. But it's who you are and what you do in life that matters. So yes, I definitely come at this from an angle of if my child believes in God, that's totally fine. It's that doesn't define her, you know.
Do you have any stories or did you see any incidents of your daughter coming home saying, so-and-so told me I was going to hell? I don't know if you've ever had that, but when I was a kid, I had some kid tell me I was going to hell because I didn't go to church.
You did. Yeah. So yes, I have. And Maxine right now is, she's nine and she, for the last couple of years, has taken the stand that she believes in God on Tuesdays and Wednesdays or Sundays and Wednesdays,
That's
I think.
Pragmatic.
so she's a part-time believer and that's fine. She said that it's Sundays cause that's the church day. And then Wednesdays cause she needs to have a school day where she believes in God.
Sure. Obviously.
You know,
yeah.
It really it's well thought out a logic. But she has had the conversation with her friends at school from time to time. It does come up, and the kids at school are mostly, you know, generally theist, I think. And so, yeah, she has had one situation where a very good friend of hers said, if you don't believe in God, you go to a very, very bad school. That was the first incident.
Okay.
So
not quite
a lovely
hell, but
euphemism for it's like that is as bad as they can imagine in kindergarten. You know?
Right.
Bad school, and then later on there was think it was in first or second grade, there was someone said that if you don't believe in God, you go to hell. And then she wanted to know what hell was. And that one stung, you know, a sure. little bit. But it was good to, you know, open up the conversation. And then I was able to write about it and, mm-hmm. you know, sort of look into it a little bit more.
The one about the school, that sounds like somebody parodying what their parents said, don't you think?
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And that's, I just don't think that most of these things happen because kids really want to hurt your kids' feelings. You right. know, they really don't. They're just trying to work it out for themselves. Like they've been told that, well, if you don't go to church, then you're going to go to hell. They're just, you know, and then they meet someone who doesn't go to church, and now they're like freaked out. Like, wait a minute, you
like this
you're
person.
Gonna,
yeah.
but you're going to go to hell.
Right.
You know what do?
Don't you know?
Deal? Yeah. So I don't. You know, they're just trying to work it out for themselves. It's, you know, they might be kind of scared for themselves, but they're not. You know, they're not trying to be mean or trying to bully. I mean, in this situation, it definitely wasn't a bully situation, but yeah, you know, they're parroting what they heard, and with Maxine, it never went, you know, any further, and I didn't push it, and, you know, we had a little talk, and that was it.
Let me play a little rapid fire game with you, and I'm wondering, these are questions that I think a lot of kids ask, and they tend mm-hmm. to get a religious answer from their parents,
okay.
and I'm wondering how you
yeah.
might approach them. So the first one, does God exist?
Well, I would say I'm a big proponent of the some people believe this and some people believe that. Uh-huh. So how I would go about that is to say, well, I don't believe that God exists, but a lot of people do believe that God exists. And some people believe that a lot of gods exist. And what the nice thing about, you know, life is that you get to make up your own mind about whether you think that God exists. That's not a question that can be, you know, it's not a true or false question. That's a belief question.
Okay. What about where do we go when we die?
Ooh.
Or if a pet dies, what
gotcha
happens?
Gotcha question.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I would probably throw in the bit about, well, this is what, you know, this is what other people believe. But for me, I would just be honest and say, I believe that when people die, their bodies decompose and they go into a state that is identical to the way they were before they were born. Mm-hmm. So it's completely peaceful in the sense that not being born was peaceful, and that's it. And you know, it's dying is as natural as living, and it's just a cycle. And you know, we have to just embrace the here and now that we have today and use that as sort of a launching to talk about how you can extend your life and be healthy and be safe and, you know, all of these things that can extend your life. And then, you know, I think that it's definitely appropriate. And honestly, it's, I would say inevitable that kids are going to hear about heaven and have already heard right. about heaven at a very young age. So I think that's going to come in no matter what into the conversation without you having to really bring it up.
I want to buy a book from my parents and I'm almost 30.
Right. I do have one more question, but forgive me if this is personal. Has your child experienced the death of anyone close to her?
No, not yet. We had the death of a dog that she took really well.
Oh, good.
And no, not really close. Not
okay.
We've definitely had deaths. We had her great grandmother and her great aunt died. So uh-huh. we talked a lot about death mm-hmm. around that time. And her one set of grandparents are Christians, so they talked to her about the aunt going to heaven, and so we were able to kind of talk about different beliefs around that.
Got it. And then the last one is, where did I come from? Where do babies come from?
Oh my gosh. Well, you got to get yourself a sex book on that one.
Because I've never really understood the answer to that one. And yeah.
Yeah, well, we have a great book called Where Did I Come From? It's been out for like 50 years.
Yeah.
And so that one's just, to me, the sex talk is way easier than the God talk.
Really?
Yes, it was. I mean, I feel confident about talking about God now, but at the time, I would much rather have been, I'll take anal oral sex, any kind of the sex.
Is that because
any of the sex over God? You know,
is that because it's just there's like a definitive way to talk about that, or it's just like, well, this is the way it is, and God, there's so many conflicting views about it.
Yes, yes, exactly. And I felt like, you know, there's just so many sticky issues that can come up with the religion thing, you know,
and the sex
people.
Thing.
Yeah, well, true. And I, for some reason, I just, you know, that I'm like, whatever.
That is hilarious.
What about Santa Claus? Did you like Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, Tooth Fairy?
Yeah.
Where do you stand on those?
So totally fine with them. You know, we kind of adopted the Dale McGowan school of thought on that, which was, you know, childhood is a time of magic and, and you know, and have as much fun as you can. And I've kind of let her be the guide on that. She's, you know, she's sort of, you know, as she gets older, I don't push as much. And right now, because she's nine, she's right on the cusp. She really pretty much knows that he's not real, but she's still really enjoying it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're kind of, she's milking it a little bit, and I'm totally willing to do that. But I feel the same way about, I feel the same way about God too. I mean, I think that, you know, God can be, you know, really fun to think about. I mean, wow. And he's like a, like Batman, you know, he's like the super cool superhero guy that knows everything. I mean, that is awesome. So yeah, I don't think that we need to be, I don't think we need to be worried about, you know, introducing magical things to our kids and supernatural things. I think that, you know, being a kid means that you get to just explore it all and, you know, throw it out all out there. Let them have fun with it. And then they'll, you know, they'll figure it out.
That kind of reminds me of when I first became an atheist and I first found like one of my best friends from high school is also an atheist. I'm like, oh, I can talk to somebody about this. And she was like, I think God is like Santa Claus for adults. And like, you've heard that a million times. And my mind exploded. I was like, oh my God, you're so insightful.
Do you think that Santa Claus and God are just, they're both examples of things you'll eventually grow out of?
Yeah, I mean, there is definitely, I mean, a part of that. I mean, I do think that, you know, anything like that is, there's a parallel for sure.
Do you think we should raise kids to be atheists? And because I've heard of a lot of atheist parents who are like, forget this. I understand the teaching your child, let them make up their own mind. But you know what? If they're going to be very clear and say, no, God doesn't exist. That's a silly thing. And they'll say the same thing about Santa, too.
Right. Yeah. See, I do not think that we should be raising our kids to be anything. I think that we should be raising them to be free thinkers. And I think that if we really want to do that, then we have to make a concerted effort to, you know, not all of our, you know, our religious baggage and every, you know, negative thought that we ever had about, you know, believers or religious people or whatever, onto our kids. I just think that that is shooting ourselves in the foot, and it's certainly putting the kibosh on their ability to really, truly make up their own minds. I mean, you know, it's one thing to laugh at Bill Maher jokes, but it's another to, you know, to take that to your kids and say, this is hilarious. These people believe that. And isn't that, you know, stupid? And because, I mean, come on, it's just, there's not, I have my beliefs. You have your beliefs. Who cares? As long as we're, you know, as long as we're kind of meeting on our common ground and on a million other things that really matter, then it doesn't, you know. I mean, it's fun to sit around and sort of kvetch with like-minded people, you know.
Sure.
But when it comes down to it, you know, we're talking about talking to kids, and I think, you know, I really value kindness and tolerance much more than being right, you know, being right.
So a thing I personally think about a lot is I don't have any kids. Hammond doesn't have any kids, so we're super experts on this.
Yeah.
But I think a lot about, like, I would want to raise my hypothetical kids, who are really cute, by the way, to be, you know, free thinkers.
They are adorable.
I know. Thank you. They take after me. to be like free thinkers and all that. But I honestly, like, if I had an 18-year-old kid who was like, P.S. found Jesus, bye.
I don't think
I would handle that well, which is so against like everything I believe and like let your kid pick their own path.
You'd be disappointed as a parent if your kid became super religious.
I really would. But like, that's shitty of me. I hate thinking that. I don't know. What do you...
Well, you know... Yeah, I think that you have to understand that your kid is very likely, unless you, you know, do something really bad, and you're a great parent. I know that about you, Jessica, so it's not a problem for you. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think that your kid is very likely to land in the same, you know, with the same general worldview that you have. They're kind of predisposed to do that. You know, if you are sort of injecting, you know, your values and the value that you have to free think. I mean, that you want your child to. What it would take for your child to, at the age of 18, you know, become a fundamentalist, you know, kid in a. You know, with a charismatic leader or something. I mean, I think that would really require them to have sort of, I don't know, maybe not so much with the free thinking on that. I don't think I'm saying this very well, but I'm just like, how do I say this better? How can I save myself on this? I think that shouldn't be the, you know, your concern. That's what I'm thinking. I think that if you raise your kid to be tolerant of other people, if you raise them to understand that, you know, people should be judged on their character, not their beliefs, you know, that you know, what's wrong isn't that someone thinks they're going to go to heaven when they die, but what's wrong is, you know, sexism and homophobia, you know, all of these things are sort of wrong, then, you know, why would your kid become a fundamentalist, you know? Get out of that. And if they did find something just spiritually that they got out of that, then... Yeah, live with it. You know, we're not creating mini-me's, you know, we don't, you know, we want our kids, we created the free thinker. It's okay to be, you know, sort of disappointed if they sort of choose a path that's different from ours, but we got to be willing to do that. I mean, that's the bottom line. We have to be willing to do that, because if we're not, that's where we go down the path of indoctrination.
Let me ask you, you mentioned at the beginning of this interview that so many of us grew up as first-generation atheists. Mm-hmm. You know, we broke free of religion at some point in our life. What's going to happen when you start seeing more and more second-generation atheists? Like, what's the difference going to be? Yeah, what's the difference going to be with kids who were raised by parents who were not religious to begin with? What differences will there be?
Yeah, well, it depends on how we raise our kids. You know, it kind of depends on this generation. I think that we have an opportunity to create second generation families that really don't struggle with these religious issues at all. That just becomes sort of, oh yeah, well, this is what we believe. This is what I believe. This is what other people believe. It's not, there's no baggage, you know, there's no resentment. There's no, I haven't come from a place where I have been injured by religion. So I don't feel these kind of, you know, I don't feel it like a hardship to talk nicely about religious people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel the same way. And I've mentioned this before in the show that I was raised by, certainly not like atheist big A parents, but certainly secular leaning folks. And, you know, my parents were both raised Catholic, not super crazy about that whole thing. But like, yeah, it wasn't, religion wasn't discussed in my household. Like once in a while, I'd kind of come home like, oh, a girl told me I was going to hell. What's that?
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. I do think that there's a difference between being raised by parents who just like are sort of, they don't
apathetic
care.
Apathetic toward religion.
Which is, I think, more common than like, those of us who steep our lives in like the atheist movement.
Exactly. Yeah, I do. And I think that is definitely becoming a phenomenon in itself is the people that leave religion, don't know how to deal with it, and then just say nothing.
Yeah.
Seems to be that's which, you know, comes with its own laundry list of problems, I have to say. But it, you know, I suppose it's a step up from from what it could be.
Yeah.
What did you learn from the other atheist writers out there right now who are writing books about atheist parenting? What did you take from them that kind of informed your own writing?
Well, I'm a huge fan of Dale's, and I definitely have, you know, I interviewed him very early on in the process, and we have a very similar philosophy about, about secular parenting. So I can't even tell you one thing that I took from him. I mean, I gained a lot from him. So I'm not exactly sure how to answer that question.
I actually have a question. It's a little bit inside baseball, but I'm really curious because you also write for your blog, which is called
Natural Wonders,
which I flubbed the first time I tried to read your intro. Is it difficult keeping up a blog and writing a book at the same time, especially because their topics seem to overlap a little bit?
Yeah, that's a great question. No, I found it to be really helpful, actually. It seemed in the first years, it seemed that, you know, it really was writing the book alongside the blog. So you had the blog was feeding the book was feeding the blog. It was really this symbiotic relationship that worked perfectly. I think it depends on who you are and what you're writing about. But for me, it took longer. You know, the book took a lot longer to write because I was writing the blog too and committing a lot of time to that. But in the end, it's so much better for it. Mm-hmm. Like in the middle of blogging, I realized that I wanted to survey a bunch of non-religious parents. So I put out this survey and was able to sort of get it out through my blog and Dale McGowan as well. And so we got 1,000 non-religious parents to respond. And then I was able to use that to sort of anchor the book. So it's really not just, my own kind of memoirist, you know, revelations or experiences. It's really based on what people have told me and their experiences too, which has really, made it a much richer book, I think.
Yeah. I love getting the feedback, and I've used it in a lot of my own like non-blog writing as well. It's great to toss out an idea on the website, get pilloried by commenters if that's the case, but then use that feedback to write a better version the next time. So it's always been helpful.
Exactly. It is helpful, especially if you're open to the feedback. I mean, there's been some things that I have just cut from the book because I thought, I don't think that I have a well thought out, thesis here. Like there's something that I'm chewing on and I'm realizing that as I'm putting it out there, I'm getting this feedback where, it's not quite either I'm saying it the wrong way or I haven't thought it out or whatever it is, but this is not the book material, And so it is really helpful in that way. It's like it's like an editor without, it's an editing.
Yeah,
it's like
it really
a Wikipedia editing experience.
Like crowdsourcing
the editor.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's something about doing it all on your own, which you're doing. Mm-hmm. But, I've been in the same boat where it's like getting that feedback is in so many ways even better than having an editor say, I don't know about this sentence or this idea or something.
Totally.
But when
totally.
You put it out there and people are like, you're totally wrong. And here's why you're wrong. And you read their stuff and you're like, some of this actually makes sense.
I should have
anticipated that and fixed it ahead of time. But I will next time.
Exactly. And it's because they're your readers. That's the audience. They're your actual readers. And so they're the ones that are going to be interested in it. And they're the ones that, even if you don't agree with them, even if they're coming to you with sort of this argument that you really don't think has a lot of merit, the fact that they're making it makes you think twice about it. Like, now either they're wrong and I need to explain why they're wrong or they're right. But either way, I need to make sure that my argument is very well made if I'm going to be facing this kind of criticism or whatever, backlash.
I found this to be the case a lot. I make some YouTube videos and stuff, and I will spend a lot of time trying to make sure I covered all the bases to any topic that I'm covering. Mm-hmm. And what I found to be really helpful in YouTube comments, of all places, is not that someone says you didn't do this or you failed this. Mm-hmm. They will offer a counter argument to what I'm saying that I feel like Well, you're wrong. I can argue with you on that. But I should have anticipated that rebuttal, and I should have addressed it ahead of time.
Yeah.
That is not feedback I would have thought of otherwise, because I figure, oh, I'm making this argument. I got to cover all these things, and I did, so there you go. Mm-hmm. Then someone says, well, what about this argument? It's like, no, you're wrong, but I should have answered you ahead of time before you could even make that argument.
Exactly. I hadn't thought this through enough to make my argument as clear as I could have the first time. Right. Yeah. You don't want to have to rebut.
Yeah.
It's
very helpful.
You want to get up there and go, yes, I covered all this in my argument.
Right. Answered your rebuttals in advance.
That's actually one of my personal pet peeves. If I'm reading like a blog post of something and every comment, the author responds to that comment.
Yes.
For some reason that like just irks me. Cause I'm like, you had your chance to get your say.
should
have seen this coming.
So
I don't know why. It just sets my teeth on edge.
I know. I understand that. I do. It's like, no, you had your chance.
Yeah.
You are on the podium.
I'm glad it's not just me.
You had your 5 minutes.
Right.
Yeah. No, I totally see that.
One random question for you. You said you came from a background of journalism where you were writing a lot about criminal justice. And I wonder if any of that knowledge or that expertise in that particular field, is there any overlap when you're writing about secular parenting? I mean, I'm not making that as a joke.
Yeah.
Maybe there isn't. But
no,
I wonder if there's anything in that world is there anything in that world that plays in here?
The answer to your question is yes, but not in the criminal aspect. In the aspect of being a journalist and writing a story that is quote-unquote objective, and fair and neutral and allowing yourself the ability to see both sides but take away sort of the truth of it and splice that together for consumption. And the reason that I think that it plays into what I'm doing now with this is that it's so much of what I think parents need to do when it comes to talking to their kids about religion. They need to adopt kind of a dispassionate tone and not, come to conversation with, an axe to grind or a chip on your shoulder or from a place of, I am the almighty authority. I know the truth. I'm going to tell you the truth here. It's, pretend you're a reporter and you're just dispassionately saying, this is what this person said. This is what this person says. This is what we know to be the truth. Make up your own mind, because that's what I did in journalism. And I really feel like that has helped me a lot in talking to my kid about religion. I can take myself out of it a little bit. And I do think that would help parents if they did that as well. So.
Sure. Okay, Wendy, thank you so much for joining us. And so people can find your blog on Patheos. What's the address?
It's Natural Wonders is the blog, and we'll provide a link in the show notes.
Okay, and your book, Relax, It's Just God, How and Why to Talk About Your Kids About Religion When You're Not Religious, is Hidden Shelves in March?
Late March.
March 31st.
Okay, great.
We'll provide a link for that, too.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you both.
Thanks for listening to the podcast for FriendlyAtheist.com. This episode was taped at Cinnamon Sound Studios in Aurora, Illinois, and the music was written and performed by Brad Chagdis. If you like what you're hearing, please consider making a contribution at patreon.com/Hemant. That's He-Man T. We appreciate your support. I'm Hemant Mehta.
And I'm Jessica Blumke. We hope you'll join us next time.